to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Rod Oram joins us this morning on BFM for political commentary. Lucky you, Rod.
Good morning, mate.
How are you? Nice to have you along this morning.
It's good to be with you.
Where to start? We were expecting to speak to Simon Bridges yesterday morning for his regularly scheduled fortnightly slot. Apparently double booked, couldn't talk to us. The office was in chaos. And you start to sort of understand why now. What's going on, Rod? These are the grown-ups in politics. These are the ones who sneer and condescend and patronise and make all the other free-thinking lefties feel like dicks. How come they're the ones the spotlight's only turned around on them, and their filth and their grub and their muck just keeps on exploding everywhere?
Oh, this is a very human drama playing out one way or another, and I have no idea. I don't think anybody knows quite where it's going. Allowing that variations of this happen periodically, this is probably one of the most extraordinary we've seen in this country or many places in terms of the sheer force and venom of it. I'm not picking sides there. There's a high degree of both on both sides is completely extraordinary, and I don't think anybody could have listened to Ross's stand-up on Tuesday without being sort of completely sort of mesmerised by it.
What was it about you that made it so mesmerising? Just that it was even happening?
Well, yes, that. I find him a fascinating character because he was so cool, calm and collected, you know, incredibly fluent in what he was saying. I couldn't work that out. I don't know whether that's because he's utterly right or he thinks he's utterly right or whether he's a fabulist who's just terrifically good at spinning a line. I've just no idea. And all I can hope is that we'll get to the bottom of this, in one way or another.
Do you think maybe it was because he felt like he was certain he had the winning hand, as it were? It was very clever too, wasn't it, for him to pop up and just announce that press conference just as the National Party caucus were meeting upstairs.
Yes, yeah. As soon as they'd gone into the meeting and left their cell phones outside, he announced he was going to talk at 11. Although I'm sure the message got into the caucus room. I say none of this with admiration. He's thought long and hard about what he's doing here, and he's executing. But quite what the agenda is, quite what the accuracy or truth of it is, remains to be seen.
When you say it's hard to pick sides, it's still picking sides from within the same team, isn't it? I'm amazed at those that he was able to release those tapes yesterday. I was always under the impression you tape somebody and they don't know that you're taping them. Tess is with us. Tess, go ahead, please.
No, I think if you're involved in the conversation, then it's fine.
I've always believed it was the other way around, but maybe I'm wrong. And so those tapes come out, and then suddenly you've got a very exactly as read Simon Bridges on those telephone recordings that Jamie Lee Ross has so carefully made too, and thought about so carefully, obviously quite a while ago. He's railroading Simon Bridges into answering all these questions on the phone that's recorded, and then you've got an article that comes out this morning talking about the four women who have said that he's been inappropriate. This is obviously what Paula Bennett and Simon Bridges went round to his house to talk to him about. And these four women, the story about these four women has obviously been on hold just in case this happens, maybe, do you think?
Yes.
BFM listeners might not be aware of that, but there is a story. It's just gone to print this morning on Newsroom, which basically is pretty grunty. And we made Rod read it just before he came to. Are you okay after reading that, Rod?
Yes, and look, I had no idea that story was coming. I work with Newsroom, and of course there's no reason why I wouldn't know that was coming, because a piece like that takes a long time to work very, very carefully on and very diligently, and Mel Reed, the writer on that, is an absolute pro.
Yeah.
She won Best Reporter and Best Story in the Media Awards.
You know, she's fantastic, but it is very, 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 it's 2 days, it's like a day and a half since that first press conference.
Clearly she's been working, and I think the story says that she's been working on that for a long time. And going back to a point you're making that, you know, they're both on the same team, i.e. national, that's true. But that's, in a very important way, I part that in my own mind, because the fact that they were friends, they were political colleagues, and obviously aren't now, is the core of the issue. And you know, the justice and truth needs to be done wherever it might lie. And sorry, that is a part of the, as it might lay. You know, we need a very functional national party in opposition, and this is clearly massively distracting and disturbing for them. No, it's incredibly important to sort out.
Does this make it a less functional party? It makes a dysfunctional party?
I'm reluctant to say that. And here I am sort of studiously trying to remain very ambivalent, if you like, or undecided until we know much more.
We have to run the hypotheticals, though. We have to sort of go, it's a possibility this could happen, possibility that could happen.
If it turns out that Ross is making a lot of this stuff up, this is purely hypothetical, that he's a very vindictive person and everything else, then to a greater extent or lesser extent, we've all run into people like that in our lives, and the people who are terrifically good at that are immensely damaging people. And you could almost imagine that that is going to knock and destabilize any organization, however good it is. Having said that, politics is a very brutal business, there would be inevitably decisions made and practices which reflect the very hard-edged game it is. You know, whether national or indeed any party is able to play that, you know, very well, very honourably, very straight, I think is very, very hard.
I don't think I've ever heard you say lots of words, Rod.
Well, yeah,
I know you're being very careful in what you say.
I'm also trying to be sort of fair in this, sort of trying to, we need to know a lot more. But there are real questions about, I broaden this out to our political system generally. I've always found it completely extraordinary that only tiny sums of money in New Zealand seem to have an influence on politics. You know, John Key had his, I can't remember what the name of the club was now, of donors, and now Bridges apparently has this cathedral club. Heaven knows where that comes from.
Aaron Bitnaga's Aaron Bitnaga's come out as saying he's part of that.
Small sums of money seem to have a great deal of influence, and people seem to build up. Some people can seem to build up, you know, a very good relationship and some favour of the party quite quickly.
$100,000 is not a small amount of money to donate, just to give to a political party.
It's a significant money sum because we spend so little on politics.
Yeah.
Thank heavens. That would be a risible amount of money in the United States, where billions of dollars are collected. But even Edelman, the casino tycoon in the U.S., who persuaded Trump to shift the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, I think he only gave about $20 million. Which in the greater scheme of American politics is a tiny sum of money to have such an influence. But the point is, there is nowhere near enough clarity and absolutely robust processes around political donations in the country. And the fact that the sums are not large is irrelevant because they seem to have an effect. And we need to know exactly where that money is coming from and from whom, and try to understand what the relationship that has then that develops as a result of that, and what effect that has on the organization and its politics. And that's far from clear, and that's true for
Whatever party, whatever politician. Interesting to see the exclusive brethren in there, and again, sneaking around under the cloak of a couple of different names, or just sort of shell companies, as it were. I know the talk back yesterday was the outrage. What are the Chinese buying? What is the Chinese buying with all this money? I understand. Someone's just written here that was quite hard for you to listen to a rational point of view. I concur. This is highly embarrassing for the National. Let's not forget the later leadership turnover prior to Ardern. I don't think this is anything like that.
No, this is very significantly different. That was internal bad blood and bad relationships that they cycled through a fair few leaders, but also that always happens when a party's in opposition and you've got a very dominant prime minister, because that was true when National was last in opposition and Clark was prime minister. Brash English,
The multi-role. What do you think, Justin? We'll move on from this, but lastly, what do you think about the prime minister's reaction to this?
I think she's wisely not saying much at this point.
That's very much at all about it.
Yep,
no, fair enough too. Hey, now, Rod, you want to talk about climate change? That's easily forgotten about when these sort of things happen. The fact that we could all just melt in a couple of years?
Yeah. Obviously, the UN's report Monday of last week was extraordinarily blunt and clear. Very detailed in its analysis of the difference between the significant impact of the rise of 1.5 degrees centigrade versus 2. And that's a half degree we really need to worry about. It's hard enough to deal with 1.5.
But it's that small an increment, isn't it?
Yeah. And, we can see technological pathways to making some very big emissions cuts. But as we see, particularly in the US, that it's all about the politics, and that's why I come back to the point that having good politics is fundamentally important. Here in New Zealand, we're better off in a very important sense, that it's clear that National and the Labour-led coalition are finding some real common ground for all-party support. A climate change framework would help us do all the things we need to do. My concern, though, is that some really important decisions need to be made in the next month or two, because we need to be clear about what the shape of that legislation is before Christmas, and that's what Climate Change Minister James Shaw is promising. So it can be turned, and this is a big job, into a bill to bring to Parliament next year early on, because we've got to have that framework to help us do things.
We don't have any extra time, do we? We've got to get it done that quickly. And when I interviewed Jacinda about it recently, I sort of said, we'll have to outline what the measures we're going to take, and then we have to just do that much again, even though it feels like we can't, because it's that serious, isn't it?
Yeah, and the crucial thing for me is that it is, of course, about the politics, as a business journalist, I'm deeply interested in technology and how business moves on through this. But for me, I think we're not actually going to really get to grips with this until we actually change our relationship with the planet. We've got to actually care a great deal more about it than we do. And we've got to understand far more starkly than we do how dependent we are on all the life on the planet, which is our life support system. And until we get really serious and understand about that relationship and care about it, then we won't care enough to do something about it. And
well said, Ron. Well said.
That's very hard for people to talk about. I find it difficult to talk about. And so that transcends the politics, the technology, the business and everything else.
True.
And that's the real issue.
Thank you, Rod. Great to talk to you. I like those last words there. Fantastic. Rod Oram, see you later. Have a good time. We'll speak to you soon.
Thanks, Mikey.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.